Labor and Commerce will now come to order. It's 3:22 on Saturday, April 6th, 2013. With us are Representative Chenault, Representative Herron, Representative Reinbold, myself, Chair Olson, Representative Sadler, Representative Millett, and Representative Josephson. We've got a full committee and a quorum. We have two items on the agenda today. Up until yesterday, we thought we were shutting down, but we've been asked to see what we can do with House Bill 196, the House School District Employee Insurance Bill, and then House Bill 169. 196 will go first. We've got the sponsor and a member of her staff, three people from the administration, and three superintendents that were invited to speak. At that point in time, we're going to hold the bill over until Monday when we start the real work on it. Again, we didn't know we even had the bill until yesterday, and we a number of us have other meetings this afternoon, so we'll be taking up, opening it up for public testimony at that point in time. And with that, House Bill 196, Representative Gaddis, and Eric Jordana, please join us.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Representative Lynn Gaddis, and I represent the Greater Wasilla area, and I'll be presenting a bill on behalf of the Education Committee in which I chair. And thank you for taking the time to hear this bill. With that, Mr. Chairman, the intent of House Bill 196 is to help Alaska's public schools with the ever-increasing costs of health care and life insurance benefits for all employees. All 53 of our school districts provide health insurance coverage for their certified and classified employees. The number of employees covered by a single school district ranges from 6 to 6,300. Each school district must obtain its own insurance policy. Consequently, the level of coverage and premiums vary widely throughout the state. House Bill 196 brings schools into one group insurance program managed by the state of Alaska by joining a larger insurance pool. Public schools may benefit in two important ways: cost savings of a volume discount that comes with the participation in a pool, and cost savings obtained by joining an agency that exists explicitly to obtain the best possible benefits for its members at the lowest possible price. In joining the insurance pool operated by the state of Alaska, local school districts would retain the right to negotiate the level of employer and employee contributions of health and life insurance premiums, which will likely result in cost savings to both the employee and employer. In fiscal year 2012, employer and employee premium costs, administrative costs, and claims costs for self-insured plans for the 53 school districts totaled almost $282 million. Under this bill, instead of 53 different insurance programs, school districts will participate in one health care insurance plan that could serve approximately 19,000 employees. Reducing costs of health insurance would allow districts to reallocate funds right into the classrooms that we all talk about, that we need, that our schools so desperately need at this time. I ask that you move this bill to the next committee so that they can consider the financial impacts and benefits for our school districts. I've asked that three superintendents testify, and since we are, you know, rush for time, I'll remind them that 5 minutes max. But these are the very people that, when asked to tighten their belts, are asking for the tools that we can give them to do just that. So, Mr. Chair, you have the list, and if you'll please call upon them.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Herron.
For the sponsor.
Your choice.
Representative Gaddis, did the administrators or you, did you contact AMLJIA and Alaska Public Entities Insurance Company if they were interested in expanding their pools to provide this service?
I did not, and I'm not entirely sure if my staff, maybe they can speak to it.
Through the chair, for the record, my name is Eric Cordero, staff to Representative Gaddis, and there are representatives on the administration that might be able to answer that question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Let's see. I think we'll start with Dina Paramo. Is she in the room or online? Online, it looks like.
Excuse me.
Hi.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and thank you for joining us today. And if you could limit your comments to about 5 minutes, it would be greatly appreciated.
Hello. My name is Dina Paramo. I am the superintendent for the Mat-Su Borough School District. I want to thank the House and Labor Commerce Committee for allowing me to provide testimony on behalf of House Bill 196. The Mat-Su Borough School District currently spends approximately $30 million on health insurance benefits each year out of its general operating fund. That is roughly 15% of all expenditures. With the average cost of health care increasing by approximately 12% annually, Mat-Su Borough School District could experience a $3.6 million increase, the equivalent of 36 teaching positions. The trend of increasing health insurance costs is nothing new to the Mat-Su Borough School District or the state of Alaska. Over the past 10 years, our health insurance costs have increased by 131%. It has become clear that we must lower the growth rate of our health care spend as our current path is unsustainable. For the purpose of today's testimony, I would like to draw your attention to several key points. Number one, including K-12 school districts as eligible participants in the statewide benefit plan would significantly increase the covered lives, spreading the risk over a much wider base, potentially saving all employees, the school district, and the state money. Point number two is including more covered lives will significantly increase the negotiating power of the group with medical providers. And finally, centralizing the administration of benefit plans eliminates significant duplication of effort. The associated costs of administration and the burden of administration on all school districts while reducing the overall administrative cost per participant. Another way to look at our health care cost is that Mat-Su Borough School Districts, for every hour an employee works for us, teacher contracts are 7.5 hours, then we have hourly employees, the cost is $13.40 for each hour. Again, I want to thank the House Labor and Commerce Committee for hearing testimony on this bill and giving public education due consideration. Thank you for your time and efforts.
Any questions for Ms. Paramo? Thank you again. Dr. Steve Atwater, are you with us, Steve?
Yeah, good afternoon, Chair Olson, members of the committee. This is Steve Atwater. I am the superintendent of the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. Thank you for taking my testimony. I'm calling today in support of HB 196. My district is self-insured for health care and as such does all that it can to contain costs. We have a wellness plan and take a conservative approach towards setting benefits, but we have not been able to slow the rising cost of health care for our employees. In 2008, our employees generated close to $12 million in claims. Last year, this amount was more than $21 million. This is a 62% increase in just 4 years. I believe that a statewide health insurance system for all school district employees will lead to savings in health care costs for my district. I'm convinced that the efficiencies that a large pool of participants would offer must be embraced by the state. As it stands today, our known level of revenue for next year is $2.5 million less than the amount needed to maintain our current level of service for our students. Any savings that we can realize from health care could be used to support instruction. At the district level, we have one full-time employee who is dedicated to our self-insurance plan And, of course, we have several other employees who devote part of their day to this health insurance. So not only would a statewide system save us money in claims, it would reduce our expenditures that are tied to health care. I realize that a statewide system is a big step for Alaska, but I encourage you to recognize this as the right step. Thank you.
Any questions for Dr. Atwater? Thanks again, Steve.
Thank you, sir.
Teresa Keel, Cordova.
Good afternoon, Chairman Olson and members of the House Labor and Commerce Committee. This is Teresa Keel. I'm the Superintendent of Schools for Cordova City School District. And I want to mirror Dina Paramo's and Steve Atwater's testimony. Cordova City School District is like all the other districts in the state of Alaska. Employee health insurance costs continue to rise, and we're finding it more and more difficult to fund quality insurance for our employees. We are a much smaller district than the Mat-Su or the Kenai. In Cordova, over the last 10 years, costs for insurance have increased on the average by 11% each year. And this next year, we are bracing for a 15% increase based on the information we've received from our current carrier. This year, 12.5%, around $813,000 of our $6.5 million budget is spent on health insurance. And next year, we project that cost to swell to 18.3% of our projected $5 million budget. We are a declining enrollment school district. Our budget is shrinking because the number of students that we have is declining. However, our health insurance costs are getting higher and higher. It's getting very difficult to provide adequate funding for the tools for our teachers to do their job in the classroom because of health insurance. Any relief for all of our districts from insurance costs by the state will be welcome. In conversations with my teachers, they concur with my sentiments. What we want are the benefits, the good benefits that we currently have, and if another provider could ensure those benefits at a lower cost, then we truly support those efforts. I want to thank the committee. Have a great day.
Well, thank you very much. Representative Millett.
Thank you. Teresa, are you still on the line?
Yes, ma'am.
So in your letter to the committee or to Representative Gaddis, you have a concern with HB 196 that the mandate will, that all districts must be part of the same insurance group, and you're talking about a changing from one monopoly to another monopoly. Are you still concerned about that, or has the bill changed to address your concerns?
I think that anytime a mandate is created by the state to go into one purchasing pool, I think there's always a concern that that initially costs will decrease, but that over time, if it's the only competitor in the group, that those costs will rise. We currently use NEA Alaska health insurance, and that's what we've experienced. Their costs began at a low rate because it was a large pool of contributors, but over time they've increased costs and increased costs and increased costs because the majority of school districts in Alaska, I believe, use them. That's my concern. Okay. Well, I believe competition breeds lower costs.
I agree with you on that point. So you don't have any employees that are part of the public employees Local 71 in your school district, right?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Ms. Keel, Andy Josephson from the committee. Just yesterday you wrote a letter essentially opposing this bill, and today you're saying you like the bill. Is that?
No, the letter that I wrote was providing some input towards the bill. It included the information that I shared with you all. Including the information that said that we're looking for any relief in health insurance, regardless of what direction it comes from.
Okay. Do you know, Ms. Keel, what you're paying for your teachers now? In other words, the state is paying about $1,330 per employee Do you know whether you're paying less than that under your under the NEA or Cordova School District plan?
Our premium is $1,712 per employee per month, $1,712. So the state plan is quite a bit lower.
All right. And do you know,
follow-up?
Thank you. What your the teacher's share is? Have they negotiated a share in their contract?
Currently, in our current negotiated agreement, the teacher's share is 8% and the school district share is 92%. We are right now negotiating a new contract, so I can't predict what it will be in the future. The school district is requesting a 50-50 split of increased insurance costs.
Any question?
Yeah, just my last question. Have you made any comparison between what you're offering in your plan and the state plan that you're seeking to join?
In terms of benefits, I have not, but in terms of cost, it's obviously about $400 less a month per employee.
I don't have any other questions.
Any further questions? Thanks again for joining us today. And our last school district person is Rob Thomason. Petersburg, are you with us, Rob?
Yes, Chairman Olson, I am here in Petersburg. And for the record, my name is Robert Thomason, superintendent of Petersburg School District and current president of the Alaska Association of School Administrators. And I echo the positive comments on House Bill 196. Health insurance is essential. Health insurance should not be a vehicle that that drains resources from the mission-critical functions of educating kids. Our district experience is somewhat similar to the others. We were participant in the state plan using Aetna in 2010 and 2011, and in that year we were facing a 40% increase with Aetna a couple years ago, which would have been $250,000. We shopped around, switched to NEA, found their policy equivalent for $200,000 per year less, plus we didn't pay the extra $250,000, so we actually came out pretty good. And now, as Superintendent Keel indicated, we're facing a 15% increase with the NEA plan, which will be about $150,000 per year increase. We in Petersburg pay about $1,650, 1650 per employee, with the district paying 80% and the employee paying 20%. On our $8 million budget, $1.2 million is devoted to health insurance. It's difficult for a district to factor in costs in the ranges of 10%, 15% on $1.2 or $1.3 million expenditures. And so our thinking is, or my thinking here in Petersburg and that of the board of Petersburg, is that anything we can do to economy of scale to control health insurance and health care costs and allocate scarce funds to direct service support of the youngsters we're obligated to serve is a good thing. The insurance is critical, but it doesn't have to be Cadillac. So thank you for the opportunity to participate, and I'll answer any questions if you have any.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Thomason, if I've got your numbers right, you're at $1,650 and you're charging 20%. That's
correct.
So if that's about $320, it's a little more. You're
right for the employee.
Right. So this is costing the district $1,330. It's the exact number the state's paying. So unless my math's wrong, you break even under this plan.
We would, but I still think it's an important thing for the state and for all employees to be able to have access to better than is. I think we're one of the few districts in the state, and it's really a testament to the community of Petersburg and the staff of Petersburg that we've had a very sharp pencil over the years, but I still don't think that means we don't look at doing something better.
Thank you. Follow up?
No.
Any further questions? Thanks again, Mr. Thomason. Joining us in the room today were also three people that were invited. Becky Holberg, Commissioner of Admin. And do you want all three of you up at the same time, or just you and Mike Barnhill?
Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Sure.
Is there going to be somebody from Public Employees Local 71? Because they have a statement here that they offer three options, but in their example, they only give one example. So I'm confused on which coverage. Is this the least, medium, or most expensive coverage that they're comparing it to in their letter?
The last three invited people are the ones at the table. They will be the first ones up on Monday.
Oh, perfect.
We'll start off. We had, I think, three people from PSA, PESA, and one other in the room. But again, this was put together on extremely short notice, and we had already been working with the superintendents and the administration. But thank you for joining us today, Ms. Holtberg, and please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you for having us here today. For the record, my name is Becky Holtberg. I'm the commissioner of the Department of Administration, and I have Mike Barnhill with me. He's deputy commissioner from the department. And if I, before I just begin, a few very brief remarks, recognizing that the committee is going to bring this bill back up, I think I might be able to shed some light on Representative Millett's comment about plan coverage. I just want to add a note in here as we begin to talk about this bill that really the only accurate way that you can compare plan coverage is by an actuarial value of the plan, because there are so many variables, including the not just the monetary contribution of the employee, but what benefits are offered or not offered, that it becomes really difficult to make apples-to-apples comparisons. And so I guess I just want to caution us that as we talk about this subject, without having an actuarial value of the plan to the employee, it gets very difficult to compare coverages. So I just wanted to note today that we appreciate the opportunity to have a conversation about health care costs and coverage in our plan, and we want to just outline a couple of points here and then how we would approach this from if we were asked to implement this proposal. As all of you, I believe, on this committee know, we spend an inordinate amount of time in our department with this very issue of managing health care costs. Behind oil production, I think this is the second most pressing economic issue in this state, and it's one that we must, absolutely must, all of us, get our arms around. We know that health care costs in the country are a problem. Health care, at some point, our actuaries tell us, is going to consume all of GDP, which is a theoretical impossibility. Alaska is no different. We know that we are experiencing perhaps a worse increase in health care costs than they are, or worse experience in terms of health care costs than many other states. So managing expenses is really important. It's really one of the core functions of our department, is managing expenses, and especially in a time of limited budget resources, how we manage those expenses and our ability to control costs becomes even more important. So that's really, as a department, what our focus is right now. And healthcare is one of the areas of the largest level of expenses and the fastest growth rate of expenses. The state currently manages several health insurance plans, but the two I'm going to talk about today are the active and the retiree plan. Those plans are for active state employees and our retirees. Between the two plans, we cover little over 85,000 people, 85,000 covered lives. For the retiree plan, of course, many of those, or about 40% of those retirees, are out of state. The combined annual spend for these plans is around $600 million. Both plans are self-insured with claims managed by a third-party administrator who processes the claims, negotiates network discounts, and receives payment on a per-member per-month basis. So I just want to talk just briefly, and then we'll close here, about some of the factors that drives costs for the health plan and how, from a philosophical standpoint, we would approach this issue. There are a lot of factors that drive costs. One is your network of providers and the discounts that you get from those providers. Your third-party administrator costs, which are per-member, per-month costs. The number of high-cost claimants that you have in your plan. And the per-unit cost, which is essentially medical inflation. And then finally, utilization, which is how often do your members use services and what kinds of services do they use. Almost all of these costs can be impacted by volume, by the number of people in your plan. So currently our Alaska Care Active plan has about 16,400 members, including dependents. In its current form, this bill would add an estimated 47,000 members to the existing plan. And theoretically, that increased volume could be advantageous in a couple of ways. It could be used to leverage deeper discounts and lower our third-party administrator costs. Larger pools can reduce your risk, so the impact of high-cost claimants is more leveled out over time. And then larger volume could also impact our per-unit costs for services and utilization. I think also in terms of plan design, utilization is very much affected by plan design, and it's something that we're very, very focused on. So as we look at our plan now, and as we look at what we might, what options we might add to our plans in the future, we are, our focus is really on value for the member, value meaning cost of services and quality, and value for the state. So with that, I think I'll close and offer an opportunity if you want to ask questions at this point in the process. I think in closing, I just want to say that, you know, the state of Alaska is paying for a large percentage of these costs now, but we are also paying for these employees as they become retirees. We are inheriting them as retirees. So we are responsible for a great deal of the money that is going into these plans today, but we're also responsible for the experience of these plans in the future. So we have a vested interest in the health of these employees, in the plan design, and certainly in the cost. So right now we have a very fragmented, uncoordinated approach to how we manage health insurance within our districts. In some districts, you may have multiple plans. I was looking at the Juneau School District, which has four different plans within one district. So I think really from a philosophical standpoint, the question is, with the growing challenge that we have with health care costs, is it better that those costs are managed in a fragmented, uncoordinated way, or would it be better to explore the alternative of managing them more in a cohesive, integrated manner? So we look forward to exploring that concept further with you, and we're happy to answer any questions about the bill or the fiscal note at this time.
Representative Millett, followed by Representative...
Thank you. I just have a couple questions. First, what is the active employees that you said you cover right now on the state plan?
Through the chair, Representative Millett, are you referring to the number of employees or
I
the...
I gave a number of the active employees, 40, I think it was 40-something.
So through the chair, Representative Millett, we have about 6,500 employees. When you look at employees plus dependents, so the actual number of covered lives in the plan, it's 16,400. This bill contemplates adding approximately 47,000 members to that pool.
And then follow up? Mm. And then what's the retiree number?
Through the chair, Representative Millett, approximately 60,000.
Okay. And then how many, so your fiscal note is adding 12 employees to cover 47,000 more, up to 47,000 more people. Does that cover the people that would, the 47 that would be retiring into the retiree account too? I mean, I'm assuming that the 47 is going to stay active because you're going to replace a teacher with a teacher, but your active will stay at level, but your retiree will grow over time.
Through the chair, I think on the retiree side, we're already aware that those employees are going to retire, and we're going to have to be dealing with that increased volume. So we've put a number of strategies in place already, some operational efficiency strategies, some technology strategies to be able to address the growing number of retirees. So that's already a known quantity because we know those folks are going to retire into our plan. So really it's about how do we manage this pool of actives.
Okay. And then just, I know I have insurance, but this is horrible. So how many different plans do we have currently? We have three, don't we?
Through the chair, Representative Mutt, we actually have four.
Four.
One of them is a very small plan that's only used by, I think, seven members right now, and we're going to be eliminating that this coming fiscal year. We have three plans that have a significant membership.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Josephson.
Yes, my question will be easier. Commissioner, can you just repeat the key variables, and I know they're in all the journals online, but you said utilization, network of providers. There were a couple others.
Through the chairperson, Josephson, I think there are probably more on this list. This was just to illustrate the things that we think about in terms of controlling costs. Your network discounts, how robust your network is and what level of discounts you get from that network. Your administrative fees, which is the per member per month cost that you pay. I will note that in a study ICER did a few years ago, they identified that one out of every $10 spent on health care or health insurance is spent on health insurance administration. So that's not an insignificant burden in terms of cost. High-cost claimants can drive costs. You can have several, if you have a small pool and you have several high-cost claimants in a year, you can really negatively impact your pool. Medical inflation is another driver of cost, and then utilization is a driver of cost. And that's really related to a lot of factors, including your plan design. And plan design, you want your plan design to encourage appropriate utilization, right care at the right time, not inappropriate or overutilization of care.
Thank you.
Follow up?
Well, I guess I am, if I could, I'm curious about differentials in rural districts, so the 230 or 40 villages. The services are going to be more expensive out there, and there's nothing that changing into a statewide plan, I mean, I suppose it would soften some of that, or it could, but others would then have to absorb those, would they not?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, you make a good point in that we have schools in virtually every community in the state. Our state plan currently ensures many state employees, and some of which are in very rural areas. So I think we have some level of experience with the cost of providing care in rural Alaska. Certainly, I think you do make a valid point that the cost of serving many of our employees in villages is more expensive. But our actuaries, we've looked at this issue in absent claims data on all those individuals. It's, I think, difficult to make a very detailed analysis on that impact. We don't have access right now to that claims data. However, I think we do have experience in managing the cost of health care in rural communities.
Representative Reinbold.
Okay, thank you. First of all, I'm going to clarify numbers and then I'm going to ask a question. But you said there were 6,500 people, and then you said there's a potential of adding 47,000. Okay, what my understanding was, I thought we had a lot more state employees. I don't know if you could just briefly go over the exempt versus the...
Certainly. Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, we have 6,500 employees approximately, and these numbers can vary almost month by month, but approximately 6,500 employees. We have in that plan, though, approximately 16,400 members, so that's employees plus dependents. But you're correct in noting that we have a lot more state employees than 6,500. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting that we are also fragmented in how we deliver health care at the state of Alaska level. We fund four union health trusts where we provide a per member per month payment to the trust, and the trust provides health care to employees. That, just as in the school district context, those are contractual arrangements through our bargaining process. And we've been quite transparent about the fact that we wish we had those employees in our pool. We believe it would be to our advantage to have those employees in our pool. However, that is something that that we would have to address it either at the bargaining table.
Yeah, and now I'm going to ask the question, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. So the question actually is, and I see the deputy commissioner here, and maybe it would be more appropriate for him to answer, but my understanding was that there was a concept coming down where the exempt employees were possibly going to be getting the same as the bargaining unit, the GGU unit, and is that going to impact this?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, I think you're speaking about a bill that was introduced possibly this week that would extend the provisions that we bargained in our current contracts to the non-covered employees, but that includes things like leave, pay increments, and the cost of living adjustment.
And through the chair, how's that going to impact our state budget?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, certainly that bill does have a fiscal note. I think if you, anytime you're extending a cost of living adjustment, that brings with it a fiscal note. I'd be happy to further discuss that bill with you.
Okay. Be very, very happy to do that. Thank you.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Holberg, certainly Alaska is not alone in seeing high costs, increasing costs for health care. So I'm sure that other states have taken on similar strategies. But if you could, are there other states that have coordinated and have consolidated educational employees with state employees? And if so, what's their experience? If you can offer any perspective on that, or your deputy.
Mr. Chair, Mike Barnhill, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Administration. Through the Chair, Representative Sadler. We have not done a state-by-state analysis. That's something that we could do. We are aware that there are states that have attempted to consolidate or provide opportunities for consolidation. The state that's most notable in my mind is the state of Indiana, which did offer as an optional program for school districts to come into the state of the state employee active health plan.
And any perspective on that? We'll do some research on our own, obviously, but what's Indiana's experience?
I'm sorry?
What do you have any information as to what Indiana's experience was?
We do not have any information on that.
Any further questions for the commissioner before we represent Heron?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, is the administration in support of this concept? But short of that, it does make sense to create a pool?
Through the chair, Representative Heron, we're officially not taking a position on this bill, but I think we do want to speak to what we believe from a philosophical standpoint can be the value of insurance pooling.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One more quick question. I know Alaska has some special circumstances in terms of the availability of health care services. Any factors in Alaska would militate towards or against this kind of plan being working well in Alaska?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I think you do make a good point in that Alaska is unique with respect to health care in many ways, one being simply our geography, the other being the fact that we have a small population, and we do have in some areas of the provision of medical care significant concentration. So addressing that is a challenge, but I think it's a challenge that can be better addressed through large pools of employees rather than going out to negotiate with a small pool of employees.
Thank you.
Representative Chenault, followed by Representative Heron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Hallberg, on just a smaller note, are all state employees required to have state insurance?
Through the chair, Representative Chenault, yes, they are.
What I see, Mr. Chairman, as a possibility of saving money is that currently right now, let's say a school district that we know of, if you have an employee that is an employee of the school district and also maybe their spouse is a state employee.
Speaker of the House, for example?
Well, you could use that as an example. you have a double policy. And, when we start talking about cost and the cost savings to individuals, I think that may be just a small place where an individual Alaskan can certainly save money because they don't have the option. If they have the option to either take or pay, you may see others that would only have one policy when they deem that a good policy, and instead of having a double policy. So. Another question or concern that may come up later down the road.
Representative Heron.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, given your skill set in insurance here, is, of course, Alaska Public Entities Insurance and AMLJI, they provide pool insurance for facilities and municipalities and school districts and workman's comp. What is your, opinion on maybe this pool should be in the private sector?
Through the chair, Representative Heron, I think that's an interesting concept, and I'll make a few comments, and Deputy Commissioner Barnhill might want to make a few comments. The challenge, because we manage a pool right now for political subdivisions, mm-hmm. and there's also a pool in the private sector managed by Aetna. There's one in the private sector managed by Primera. The challenge that we see with that is we often have entities jumping back and forth between the two plans, but depending on their experience. Mm-hmm. And it becomes very difficult to manage a pool whenever the pool can shrink very quickly in a year when people jump in and out of it. So with that, I may see if anything else to add to that.
Sure. Mike Barnhill through the chair. The issue is scale. Larger scale, lower risk in insurance pooling. Hopefully lower costs, the ability to leverage those covered lives into better discounts. We have a pretty large pool, but one could argue it could be larger And if it were larger, we would have benefits. For instance, in this past year, we've had some high-cost claimants. That's increased our costs probably $8 to $9 million. We have to spread those costs across the pool. If it was a bigger pool, we could spread those costs further and decrease the cost for everyone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Millett.
Thank you. I don't know if it's for Mr. Barnhill or for you, Commissioner. Is there a way before Monday you can get us a breakdown of how many of the 6,500 active employees and the 16,000 employees and dependents live in rural Alaska versus urban Alaska, just so we can get a kind of a feeling for what our experience is with urban versus rural health care?
Through the Chair, Representative Millett, we will go back to the division and see. I'm sure we can get you that information. I don't want to make a commitment by Monday without checking with the division first.
Okay. Thanks.
Representative Rainbow.
And I'm just going to follow up one more time on this. On this, you said you fund four health union trusts, and it was that 16,000 employees in that trust? How many between those four?
Through the Chair, Representative Reinbold, it's more than that. It's
11.
That's probably about right. He did the math in his head faster than I did. It's probably about 11,000 employees. We have about 17,000 state employees. We between 17,500. We insure 6,500 of them. So we have four union health trusts. What I think is the important thing to note, though, is that our largest bargaining unit, which is the general government unit, is in a health trust. So that's why you see so many employees covered by health trusts in terms of numbers, because that bargaining unit is our largest.
And just as a follow-up, so the total number of all state employees, whether they're in this health trust or not, I'm trying to remember my subcommittee finance, labor, and commerce. I had the number. I have the sheet back in my office, but I think it was around 22,000.
Through the chair, President Reinbold, 17,000 approximately. That number really depends on if you're counting just permanent, full-time, long-term, non-permanent employees, part-time employees. So we can go back to the Division of Personnel, which is really sort of the authoritative a data source on that, and get you the exact number of state employees, if that would be helpful.
It would be.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the dialogue. It's a good chance to get educated. Commissioner Hulford, would there be any benefits to having health insurance be portable? In other words, would it benefit someone who's covered under health insurance at one school district who then might change to a different school district to be under the same plan? Would they avoid duplicate deductibles, waiting periods, that kind of thing?
Through the Chair, Representative Sadler, certainly. It would make the experience of moving from one school district to another, or from one position to another within a school district, much more seamless. As I mentioned before, there are school districts where there are multiple plans within the district, and there may be a plan for the administrative component of the district, for the teachers, for the support staff, and those plans can have wide variation in terms of the cost to the employee and the coverage. So, and that's just within a district, let alone between districts. So certainly I think there could be some benefit for the employee in a seamless transition between districts if they did choose to move.
Mr. Barnhart. In a session of world-class fiscal notes, we've got to put you on the top five list for this. Can you just give us
quickly? We can, Mr. Chair, go through the fiscal notes. It involves going through the mechanics of the bill. So let's start with the fiscal note that has the $100 million on it. So this bill contemplates, as has been testified to, 47,000 covered lives coming into our pool, which is about 16,000 covered lives. That's quadrupling the size of the pool. In insurance land, we try and get 3 to 4 months of reserves in terms of, you know, helping in, protect the pool against claims spiking, health costs spiking. Our rough estimate of 3 to 4 months worth of claims for this pool of 47,000 people is about $100 million. And just real easy math, you had a testimony from the sponsor earlier that in FY12, the health insurance cost for all of the school districts was about $282 million. This bill is going to take effect in FY15. Folks can come in FY15 and finish coming in by FY16. Our rough estimate is $300 million in health insurance claims costs for these school districts. 4 months of claims cost at $300 million is $100 million. So that's where the $100 million comes from. So the bill contemplates right now that that $100 million could be drawn from the public education fund over a 10-year period to pay costs. We hope that we don't have to draw that immediately, but here's the thing. We don't know anything about this, the health of this particular pool. This could be a healthier population. It could be a less healthy population. Even if we knew that today, we don't know the health, the relative health of this population in 2 or 3 years. So having access to that $100 million is of vital importance because we have our existing reserve for the 16,000 covered lives we have today. We don't want to run that dry once we have folks coming in on July 1st, 2014. In order to hold the public education fund harmless, that's the idea of the bill, there's a payback. So the payback provision works like this. We bill the school districts for their first 4 months of claims. Whatever that is, we'll send a bill. The school district has 10 years to pay it back. When we get the payback, we funnel it back to the public education fund. So as you look at this fiscal note, you see the draw on the public education fund. We've put it all in the first year just for ease of reference. Otherwise, it gets very complex. In reality, that draw would probably happen over a period of years. And then the $10 million running across the page is us collecting the money back from the school district in equal increments over a 10-year period and then putting it back into the public education fund. Any questions on that note, Mr. Chair? Seeing none, let's think. Was that too fast?
No, I'm still adding them up in my head.
That one was easy.
Representative Chenault, did you have a question on the fiscal note?
Not on that one.
On another one?
No.
Nope.
Okay.
I can read.
Any further questions for the administration? And I do notice that we have Deputy Commissioner Thayer in the room. Are you here for questions or just enjoying the show?
Enjoying the show.
Well, with that, we're going to carry the bill over until Monday, and at that point, when we bring the bill back up, we'll start with the people that were on the list for today that haven't had a chance to testify. And with that, we'll take a brief at ease, and thank you again for joining us. Second item on the calendar today is House Bill 169, RCA Regulation of Telephone Books. And we lost our room.
You did.
To present the bill will be... Gee, she looks familiar. Anna Latham from my staff. Welcome back, Anna. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Anna Latham, staff to Representative Olson. Before you today is the CS for House Bill 169. This legislation eliminates the regulation and production of telephone directories by the RCA. Currently, Alaska Administrative Code requires RCA oversight of the production and distribution of white page directories. I'd like to specify that this legislation only applies to the white pages, not the yellow pages. With the widespread use of cell phones, people create their own directories within address books on their phones and other mobile devices, and no longer rely on the white pages in ways that they once did. According to a 2008 Gallup survey, only 11% of households across the U.S. rely on white page directories. Technology has changed and is continuing to change. These directories are increasingly incomplete because they're cyclical, they're updated and distributed only once a year, they don't include mobile listings, and according to the National Center for Health Statistics, in 2009, one out of every four households didn't even have a landline and relied completely on cell service. Many customers that do have landlines request that their numbers are unlisted and therefore unpublished. In the case of one provider, that was over 40% of their customers. Consumers have expressed strong opinions about not wanting printed directories and often return those that are delivered per the mandatory requirements now in place. Many customers have expressed concerns about the environmental implications of distributing paper directories only to have them returned for recycling, And as you know, there are many places throughout the state where recycling is not an option, and they go into a landfill. In an effort to modernize Alaska's regulatory requirements, House Bill 169 allows telecommunication providers to directly meet the wants and needs of their customers. So I promise to be brief. That concludes my testimony, and I can answer questions should you have any. Thank you.
Well, I'd entertain a motion to adopt the CS as the working version of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Committee Substitute House Bill 169, version U, uniform as the working document.
And Anna, can you explain the minor differences? Seeing no opposition. Go ahead, Anna.
Thank you. And the differences between House Bill 169, version A, and the CS, which is version U, is lines 7 through 9 were eliminated, and in a competitive local exchange market, was completely eliminated for that. That the rationale for that was to streamline the legislation and to eliminate the possibility of phone wars, which you may recall from a few years back. So
it's been at least 10 years. Seeing any further questions or
Mr. Chairman, I'm afraid I'm old. I still use and enjoy the white pages. I'm getting old that way, but I want to make sure I understand the current regulatory background. Does RCA regulations require a telephone service provider to issue white pages? What are the current laws regarding that?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, that falls under their requirements, and all telecommunication providers within the state of Alaska are required to produce and distribute white pages at this time.
And this legislation will make it optional?
That is correct.
Is there an anticipation that there will be any white page directories distributed after the, once it does become optional?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, I think so far 16 states and D.C. have enacted similar legislation, and all of them have they have opt-in programs. So it will be optional. States have done it in different ways. Ohio set up a call center to handle inquiries from residents that didn't have books. California requires that every phone bill have the number to request a phone book on the bill. So states have gone about it in different ways. But of the states that have enacted this legislation, they've all provided some sort of option for still receiving a white page directory.
Okay. Well, I'm going to remove my objection, and if there's no further objection, we'll adopt the CS. And with that, we'll open up public testimony. And I see two people in the room. No? Anybody else in the room that I'm missing? Then we'll go offline to Leonard Steinberg, ACS. Are you with us?
Chairman.
Thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure. Shall I go ahead and
Yeah, please state your name and affiliation for the record. You've got our undivided attention.
Sure. Thank you. My name is Leonard Steinberg. I am the Senior Vice President for Legal, Regulatory, and Government Affairs for Alaska Communications, and I want to thank you for this opportunity to offer some brief comments in support of HB 169 and the committee substitute that has just been discussed. HB 169 clarifies an ambiguity in the law. The Alaska Public Utility Act, AS 4205, specifically describes the boundaries of the RCA's authority. With regard to telecommunications, the statute precisely defines the technical characteristics of the services to be regulated. Nowhere in the statute is the RCA's jurisdiction extended to the production and distribution of telephone books. Yet for years, ACS and other local exchange telephone companies have been required by the RCA and its predecessor to produce printed copies of white pages telephone books. HB 169 provides the needed clarification of the law to clearly remove this issue from the RCA's purview. Telephone books lack the usefulness they may have once had and are largely unwanted by customers. Telephone books do not include wireless numbers, numbers used by Skype, FaceTime, or other voice-over-the-internet providers, and the numerous landline customers that request that their numbers be unlisted. As more and more customers use personal digital and internet-based directories, They have become increasingly upset about receiving unwanted telephone books. I will note that the RCA recently granted partial and temporary relief from its mandatory phone book regulation, allowing an opt-in where subscribers are given an opportunity to request continued delivery of white pages. The results in Anchorage are very telling. After an extensive outreach program, only about 5,000 Anchorage subscribers requested continued delivery of the book. This compares to approximately 120,000 books that were produced in the cycle that preceded the opt-in program. Although the RCA has granted limited relief, the test phase period and the need for subsequent rulemaking means that the final outcome is uncertain and will take at least another 4 or 5 years of regulatory oversight and proceedings to determine. These additional proceedings create unnecessary work and for ACS and similarly situated companies, as well as for the Commission, particularly in light of the RCA's questionable authority to regulate telephone books at all. ACS strongly believes that AS 4205 never contemplated the regulation of phone books and urges the legislature to act now to make that clear and that to ensure that white pages directories are not subject to further regulatory oversight. ACS supports the committee substitute that was discussed just a few moments ago, I appreciate the opportunity to testify. Thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thanks again. Any questions for Mr. Steinberg? Ted Molinitsky, we just had the opportunity to talk a few days ago, and I believe that your comments are going to be roughly similar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually don't have any testimony or offer. I am a consultant to ACS, and I'm available if there are any questions that might come my way. Thank you.
Oh, perfect. My apologies. We had you down as yes, not a question mark. We also have Mark Madero from GCI available for questions. Seeing that.
Yes, this is Mark Madero from GCI. I participated with Mr. Steinberg in the proceedings, and GCI would support the committee substitute to 169. I'm available for any questions.
Excellent. Thanks again. Any questions? Seeing none, is there anybody else online? Hearing none, and nobody else new in the room, we'll close out public testimony at this point in time. Any committee comments?
Turn that page, Mr. Chairman.
What are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move committee substitute House Bill 169, version uniform, from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Seeing no opposition, the bill moves out of committee, and with that, we'll adjourn at 4:20.